line shot, and it is caught, and the ball game is over, and the Los Angeles Dodgers have won the pennant. The Dodgers are headed to the World Series for the first time in 29 years.
I heard my mom cry. I heard her pray the night Chicago died.
All right, well, it's over. It's over. It's over. I'm going to say it five more times for it to sink in. It's over.
Please don't.
It's over. Apparently, it's over. I guess it's over. It's over. How many days until spring training? Anybody? Paging? Anybody? Anybody till spring training? Going once, twice, three
times?
I'm
going to say it's 109 days till spring training.
109. I'll take 109. 11-1. The LA Dodgers punch their ticket to the World Series. Enrique Kike Hernandez, three home runs, running around the bases, taunting the Cubs, enjoying himself like he never has before. The most homers this guy's ever hit in a season was this year when he hit 11. He hit three tonight. In his third year in baseball, he hit three home runs. He hit three tonight. Jose Quintana did not have it. The Cubs offense didn't have it all series.
Yeah, Jose Quintana didn't have it. And I think, you know, you brought it up to me here before we came on the show. And we were talking about this after the clincher of Game 5 against the Nationals. Pitching Quintana even a little bit in that game, you got to save bullets this time of year. You know, I mean, this is the time of year where it really counts to conserve pitches if you possibly can.
The way they started the series, it certainly impacted the entire series. Yeah. Now, I think everybody, by the way, Andy Mazur, Harry Tynowitz, Patty Vasquez, there's Julie Mark Carmen, you're all right, Patty, it's going to be okay. No one here is saying, I don't believe, that the Dodgers weren't the better baseball team.
No, the better team won.
They were, but we were not set up well to compete with them or to see what it looked like if everything was set up perfectly. It was nowhere close to that.
I would rather have our nucleus than their nucleus. Okay? I'd rather have our infield, our catcher. I think that, you know, Almora is going to be better as he becomes the everyday center fielder. And, you know, you got to feel pretty good about Kyle Hendricks, even though he didn't, you know, have it. He gave up multiple home runs games for the first time in his career back to back. But the Dodgers did everything better than the Cubs. Yeah. They out hit the Cubs. They were much more intelligent than the Cubs. They had a game plan. They were first ball smacking a day on Quintana. They did not swing at bad pitches that Hendricks likes to get guys out with. Mm-hmm. And the Cubs were swinging at everything. They were so un-Cub-like.
You know, the thing, too, you got to understand, and it's unfair to kind of compare this year's team to last year's team because it was night and day. But the Dodgers subscribed to the Cubs theory of a year ago, and that's win your division by a lot, be able to conserve pitching, be able to, you know, go to a six- or seven-man rotation at times during the year because you wrapped up the division so early that you set yourself up for the playoffs. Cubs were basically playing playoff games all September. Again, You got to get in to try to have a chance. So no one's making excuses, but it's a lot different. It was a lot different entry into the playoffs this year than it was last year. And you're seeing now how important depth and also conservation of arms during a year can mean to a team in the playoffs.
Patty, how you doing over there?
I'm okay. As soon as Quintana walked the first batter, I was just like, "That's." I mean, he walked the first batter up. I was like, "Okay." I mean, how many walks did we? They walked 27 batters. How many? By that point, at that point, it was 27.
So
many walks.
I wasn't trying to stop you there.
Stop me, please.
Well, you're making an actually, I think, a very cogent point here because Chris Taylor, the Dodgers' leadoff man, killed the Cubs mm-hmm. the entire series. That guy went up, saw five, six, seven, eight, nine pitches.
It was nine pitches.
Right. Yeah. And he was getting on. And then he was ripping doubles. He was getting on via the walk. He killed him. That lineup, those guys were fantastic working the count all series long.
You know, the Cubs could really use leadoff man.
Yep.
And I want to compare the Cubs to the Dodgers. I don't want to sit here and compare them to last year's mm-hmm. team. Obviously, last year they had a leadoff man.
Yep.
They did not have a leadoff man this year. Kyle Schwarber, you know,
that was a mistake from the beginning.
Right. And it lasted way, way, way too long. And when Ben Zobrist, you know, was a better leadoff man, and he's 35. that wasn't a good sign. John Jay was probably the best leadoff man you had all season.
And I'm not, listen, it's
Anthony Rizzo was your best leadoff man all year.
Yeah, technically, he was great. But, I mean, if I'm Theo Jed, first thing I do is, you know, I mean, I want to obviously address the pitching, but first thing I do is I go find me a leadoff man.
Well, they could have paid Fowler. I'm not exactly sure what they could have negotiated and how much it would have cost. But you're talking about a guy, just for the record, who hits from both sides of the plate and has an on-base percentage, at least he did last year, of 400. That guy is hard to replace.
Very, very true. And, you know, you have to try to replace that guy with two. I mean, it's kind of, it's the old Moneyball theory. You know, you have to, you don't have to replace him with one guy. You can replace him with a platoon situation. And again, I don't feel as though, and I think you you brought up a great point, Harry, with the fact that Almora is going to be a good player, a better than good player once they give him some chances. And he didn't get very many chances because Joe wanted to use the veteran guys. And, you know, you see what happens. I'm not saying he's blocking their progress, but we really don't know what we have in him.
Tom Thibodeau hated playing rookies. He refused to play. Jimmy Butler got off the bench like four or five times his rookie year. He had a big game in New York, and then really that was about it. But I don't know if Madden feels that way about rookies. Ian Happ came up the middle of May, had 24 homers, 68 RBI, and never got a start.
Yeah.
I think he had six at-bats in the postseason. I don't get that. When you're struggling for offense and you've got a guy on your bench who had 24 taters, why doesn't he get an opportunity?
Yeah. And you know, again, we go into the situations where managers overthink things a little bit in the playoffs. And, yeah, every game is much more magnified than, say, game 59 of the year when you're on the road in Cincinnati on a random Thursday night in front of 2,000 people.
Good game, game 59.
You know, game 59 as compared to game 3 of the NLCS is obviously a little different situation. And sometimes I feel like guys get caught up in having to try to be too perfect and too fine with setting a lineup for defense or setting a lineup for this or setting a lineup for your pitcher when why don't you just put the best possible lineup you have on the field and just kind of stick with it.
We're also we're going to break down what's coming for the Cubs in the offseason and what next year looks like. But this is also we're going to have a fun hour of Cubs celebration. I'd like to play a little
two
game.
Hour.
2 hours. Is that what we're doing?
You're doing 2 hours?
I thought we were doing 1 hour.
Oh, we're doing 1 hour.
Yeah. So I think it's an hour. And I think we should play a game that's called At Least. It's called At Least. I made it up about 5 minutes ago. At Least.
Yes,
at
you
least.
Did.
Yes.
3-1-2-9.
It's already sweeping the nation.
Yes.
Hey, at least you thought of an idea for this show.
There you go. We're going to throw it around.
And at least it was a good one.
We're going to throw it around the horn right now, and then you guys can chime in. 312-981-7200. I will demo it, and then Gary, you'll be next, and then Andy, then Patty. And Michael, if you'd like to participate, that'd be lovely. At least they went to the National League Championship Series 3 years in a row. Harry.
At least Wade Davis proved what a mean SOB he is on the hill.
Yeah.
Yes.
At least they didn't get swept.
Yes. Yes.
At least there was baseball in October, and it was beautiful weather.
Bang. Michael.
At least the field looks amazing, and I love that park they put on the outside of it.
There you go. That nice. That works. Whatever. There it is. 312-981-7200. We're with you till midnight. Patty will have a regular show. I'm sure she'll talk some Cubs, too. The season's over. Kike Hernandez, I want to kill him. He hit 3 home runs tonight. He ran around Wrigley Field and taunted all of us.
What would you have done?
The same thing.
The same thing that Javi Baez does when he watches ball go off the video
board. Right, last night.
Contreras last night off the video board.
You had no problem with it last night.
Video board. Yes.
Last night you had no problem with Baez doing it or Contreras doing it.
I didn't really totally love Contreras standing there for an hour.
It was a good old-fashioned butt-kicking, and he enjoyed every minute
of it. He sure did.
And Baez, he didn't come jogging down the third base line. You know, he kind of strolled like Gary Cooper, you know, just slowly walking to the plate.
Putting on the Ritz.
I am admittedly salty. We'll do another round. I'm very salty, like a nice salty pretzel. I had one pretzel walking out of the park tonight. I had a pretzel, I had a hot dog, I had an ice cream, and then I left.
That's what I want to know from people. I want to know what they binge ate during the game.
Oh, so you needed something.
I want to know what they're drowning their sorrows in now.
That too, binge eating and or drinking.
I recommend a good kale smoothie.
Ugh.
Get yourself, cleanse yourself as you go into your
off-season.
She
said binge, not purge.
Yeah.
Binge, Purge, all the same game. Hey, it's 3-1.
I did Summer Stock Theater with Kale Smoothie in Utah.
Light hitting shortstop in the Dodgers organization, yes. I'm not mistaken.
Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m. Then stick around for the latest shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago, 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV. Another round of At Least. You're welcome to join. 312-981-7200. We'll hear a little bit from Joe Maddon, too, as he gives his thoughts on the Cubs season coming to an end. 11-1 to the Dodgers. They take the series 4-1. 720 WGN.
Chris Bryant turns on one. That's way back in left field. And this one is up off the scoreboard and out. Chris Bryant finally delivers the long ball. His first of this postseason.
His first of the postseason.
We're really playing Feels So Good.
Chuck Mangione. From the 1980 Winter Olympics.
Great to be with you guys,
hey,
and gals.
Pretty sure Michael Heidemann knows how to set a mood, man.
But it doesn't feel so good. It feels so painful.
It hurts. It hurts so bad.
You know what was painful about that home run? They like to show game highlights during the game.
Mm-hmm.
They showed that highlight from every single angle. All
gotta milk it for all it's worth.
Game long. That's all they got.
Mm-hmm.
So it's over. Cubs lose in 5 games. Great year, great stretch, and nothing but positive for the future. The window, as they say, is open and will be for a while. So we'll see what they do in the offseason. I am going to miss Jake Arrieta. It does not sound like he'll be back. The Cubs are not going to give him what other teams will, so he's going to go elsewhere. That guy was simply phenomenal. Cy Young, World Series champion.
No hitters.
Incredible competitor.
Pitched him into the playoffs.
Excellent yoga.
Phenomenal beard. But he really, you know, I was listening to Theo talk this in one of his conference calls or whatever it was, and he said that Arrieta being as good as he was set the table. Well, if he's this good, then we should probably go out and get John Lester and start adding on and actually building a team that could compete for a championship. Like, he really did change the culture, not only by his performance, but also in the clubhouse. That guy was a phenomenal asset for the Chicago Cubs. He's going to be missed.
He's such a bright player. Wonderful hitter, by the way. Before we forget that, he was a really good hitter.
Yeah, mm-hmm. hit a bomb against the Giants.
Right. My son loves video games. He doesn't really watch sports, but when I told him Jake Arrieta might have pitched his last game last night, he goes, "Dad, remember he had 2 no-hitters before he had a loss."
Mm-hmm.
He no-hit 2 different teams before he would get a loss. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and you know, it's going to be interesting to see what they do as far as that staff is concerned, because you have 3 guys back. You have Lester, Quintana, and Hendricks. And likely Lackey, you know, wherever he's going to go to get his haircut, and it's likely not going to be here. And Arrieta, again, likely not to be here. So if you kind of look at the blueprint for what Theo and Jed have done here, it's not developing the pitching, because the pitching in the minors is in the low A's. It's in single A, it's in double A, and it's not ready, or it's with the White Sox right now, because Dylan Cease was probably about the closest that they had to a major league ready pitcher. But there is money in the coffers. I mean, $10 a beer, you know, and whatever, you know, whatever's going on there.
$11.50.
What's not going on there?
I'm just saying, there's money in the coffer. I look at the list of free agents, and nobody really just jumps out other than the guys that the Cubs, you know, have right now. I mean, Arrieta's probably one of the top dogs as far as the pitching is
Johnny
concerned.
Cueto doesn't do anything for you?
Well, Cueto had had an up-and-down year, and he got
Yu Darvish?
Yu Darvish was the other guy that would be something that I think they should investigate, just because of the fact that he is.
What about a Lance Lynn?
He's got, and that's another guy too. I mean, Lance Lynn would be nice to steal away from and listen to Cardinals fans cry and whine about something else as they accept their National League Central participant trophies for the second straight year. Those are interesting decisions that will have to be made, and I really think that they're going to buy some pitching, and I wouldn't be surprised if you see a quote unquote surprising trade this offseason as well.
Yep.
I have a text from a friend of the show that asks, do you guys think there are any sacred don't ever trade under any circumstances players on this roster?
They're not getting rid of Rizzo.
They're not going to get rid of Rizzo. They're not going to get rid of Bryant.
And I also think that Wilson Contreras is safe.
I think he'll be around. I think Baez is probably
untouchable.
Safe as well.
I think
Schwarber's the guy to me that makes the most sense to be dealt to an American League team.
He's a DH.
Yeah.
And see if you can recoup some pitching, see if you might be able to recruit a leadoff type of hitter. Because the fact is, if you're talking about getting a leadoff hitter, more than likely that's going to be an outfielder. More than likely.
Your infield set. Who you got leadoff on that free agent list? Yeah, any leadoff man?
Let me see. I'll look through here, and I'll have my comprehensive report for you coming up here after the 11:30 news.
I noticed you're pining for Jake Arrieta, but you will not miss John Lackey?
I will not miss John Lackey.
I won't either.
I'll tell you who I will miss, though, who I think is also going elsewhere, is Wade Davis. Wade Davis was phenomenal this year, and he's, what, 32 years old, I want to say, Wade Davis?
Then say it.
And I want to make sure I'm correct, Harry. Wade Davis, I should know that off the top of my head, but I just want to double-check myself here.
The only All-Star.
Is 32, I am correct. And he just turned 32 for that matter. He was September birthday, Wade Davis. I would be very tempted. What does it cost for Wade Davis for three more years? Is that 15 a year?
Well, he had 10. He made 10 this year.
So is it 15?
It's at least 12.5, 13.
Okay. I mean, I don't think that's.
I think he gets more. I think he gets more.
I'm just saying it's at least that.
Yeah.
If not more.
Well, all right.
How about a name, Carlos Gomez? Is that doing anything for him?
Oh, Cargo.
I don't mind a Carlos Gomez, but
best.
I mean.
Baseball 30,
32 years old, free agent, center fielder, could be moved to a corner, and could be a pretty interesting leadoff type candidate. Just perusing the list for the first time here, I mean, just looking at, and this is not including, you know, what you might be able to get in a trade.
And just, you know, the way the year ended and Al Mora getting some at-bats at the top of the order, I wouldn't be surprised if they were a little bit more aggressive in putting him there next year. And I think,
and I don't mind that.
Yeah, neither do I. I was hoping they would do it this year.
Mm-hmm.
All right, quick timeout. I do want to get some Joe Maddon in here as he's got a bunch of thoughts on the end of the year and whether and how the pitching finished up and the shape that's in going into next year. And we'll do another round, I promise, of at least, because just for me, I really enjoy it.
Take some calls and text or something.
Absolutely. 312-981-7200. At least, like at least they didn't get swept was a good one. At least Ian Happ is 24 years old.
At least we didn't have to watch the Bulls game tonight.
There you go.
At least we got a break from Joe Maddon.
Ooh, harsh.
At least I got to watch another baseball game with my family. And I didn't swear. I know.
Okay, I'm done being negative now.
At one point I said, holy fudge sticks on a horse. And that's how good I was at not swearing. At
holy fudge sticks and a horse.
Yeah, I don't know. That's what my brain came up with in the moment of not swearing. I didn't choose those words. They just happened all together.
Do you have like a sitcom that's coming out on the WB that we don't know about?
Right?
Quick timeout. It's our final Cubs True Blue postgame show. 1.5 hour to go in the 2017 season on 720 WGN.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we'd love to be the last team standing, but it wasn't our year this year. I mean, pretty impressive though, to make 3 NLCS in a row. I mean, that's, you know, we're not going to hang our heads on that, but, you know, obviously, you want to be the last team standing.
Chris Bryant. Indeed, you do be the last team standing, but hey, perhaps they will be next year. Window wide open. We all know it. No reason to feel down, even though they're out. You feel down over there, Andy?
No. Let me ask you this question, because I was sitting up in the studio and I was watching the game, and it was kind of a melancholy. If you know, I really didn't have any feeling. I wasn't mad. I wasn't sad, and I wasn't, you know, anything in between. It was just kind of like, oh, okay, well.
You're a meh.
We're going to be here. You just have this feeling that they're going to be there again. You just kind of have that feeling of, and maybe it's living off of the last world, you know, the World Series of last year, because, you know, you get to see one in your lifetime. You think you feel pretty good. But I wasn't really down up there.
They didn't leave anything on the table. They got beat by a better team. They barely should have The fact they got by the Nationals, what I'm saying, was incredibly impressive in my mind. That was a very good baseball team.
Yeah.
I didn't like their chances. They got it done. It was impressive.
The Cubs are so easy to love. I mean, this is a group of guys that are not spoiled. There is no Sammy Sosa on the 2017 Cubs. And I refuse to compare this team to last year. I'll just say this team this season, they were below 500 at the All-Star break.
2 games under.
And they came out at the All-Star break like a house on fire. They were monsters, and it was a pleasure to watch them. You know, Rizzo does things. You know, they got guys that have multiple skills. Like, I love Marian Hossa on the Hawks because he's an offensive star who comes back and plays defense. Not a lot of guys do that. Yeah. Andy, you know,
two-way player, yeah.
And Rizzo and Bryant are so great offensively, but they're also busting their butts on defense every chance they get. It's so easy to cheer for these Cubs. I had all the feelings you didn't have. I had them all double.
Okay.
I was depressed. I was angry. Aww. I was frustrated.
Wow, I just didn't. I think it was just the way that it escalated very quickly.
Yes, it did.
You know, I mean, it got out of hand very quickly, and I think that, you know, it can go that way in a clinching game. We saw it happen in the NLCS Game 6 last year when the Cubs won and shut them out.
It was hard to be emotionally invested because it got away, like you said, so quickly. Yeah. There weren't any bad calls. It was just like it was gone by the third inning.
Yeah, and I was listening to the Blackhawks game, so at that point I was comfortable. I was good.
Well, when Kike Hernandez hit the grand slam and it was 7-0, I just, you know, started walking around the park and talking to people and just saying, you know, it's been a great run. We've had a great time, and I'll see you the last day of school. I'll see you in April.
And up to that point, you were planning on naming your first kid Kike.
I was thinking about that. Hey, this is Joe Maddon, and he was talking about that World Series hangover.
My take on it this year was, coming off the last 2 years, and especially having won, you know, being the team that wins for the first time in 108 years, was very difficult for guys just to get jump started in April and May. I think that really is legitimate. I don't think it's a stretch. I don't think it's hyperbole in any way. It's true. It's just true.
Yeah, I agree with him. And I think the Cubs were, for the most part, at least all season long, kind of climbing uphill. Last year, I mean, they start the year 25-6, and that boulder was rolling straight down, and they were just smashing teams. This was a lot different. They had to fight their way pretty much the whole way to get in, down the stretch, fight their way through the first round. Yeah. So it was a different feel.
Some funny notes, I guess, coming out of the clubhouse here tonight. Our friend Megan Malachy over at Channel 2.
Mm-hmm. New chair girl.
Says the
great tennis player.
The best quote, and I'm taking this right from her Twitter feed. David Ross near his old locker getting something. John Lackey walking up to him and saying, "Rossi, that isn't your locker anymore."
That's awesome. That's awesome. Hey, a little more Joe Maddon here. I'd like to hear what he's talking about as far as the better team won the series.
The better team won over the course of these five games. They played really well. They kind of up-pitched us and everything else. So give them credit, Dave Roberts and their entire staff. I just want to say congratulations. You know what it feels like coming off of last year. We were celebrating versus them in this exact same spot. So, you know, they've had themselves a spectacular year, and I want to wish them all well in the World Series.
That's very nice of you, Joe.
You know, there's another at least for you. At least Dave Martinez won't get a managerial job, and he'll be back as a Cubs bench coach.
You think so?
I think it's hard. Last year was the year he would get it, you know, coming off the World Series where he and Maddon looked like geniuses.
At some point, that guy's going to manage a club, I would think.
He has to. I mean, he's a very bright guy, very enthusiastic. Players love him.
Isn't it always interesting, though, that people like me and you and others would say, yeah, Dave Martinez has got to be a manager. We have no idea if the guy's a good manager. But everyone said it, and we just buy in. He stands there. He goes to the replay better than anyone I know. That guy's got to be a manager someday.
Andy knows all three surviving managers.
Yeah,
right,
it's
now.
Interesting. I've worked with all three.
I know the play-by-play boys said Houston Robert Ford.
We know their engineer as well, Matt Boltz.
And Matt Boltz is their engineer. You want to pick somebody to root for, yeah. Go for the Astros, go for Boltzy. Hey, one more from Matt in here.
For Boltzy.
Why not? How about the pitching? Was the pitching overtaxed this year, Joe?
The big thing is to make sure our guys get rested. Nobody was overtaxed this year in regards to starting pitchers, throwing too many innings, etc. Quintana's a great addition. Of course, the bullpens are always in a state of flux on an annual basis, but Wade really gave us definition this year, too. You know, it's just one of those things you address. Our guys are so good at addressing needs in the offseason, so I really believe that'll be fulfilled.
That sounds to me like signing Wade is a possibility. I don't think he'd even say that if they were walking him out the door.
He could say anything. You know, talk is cheap. It's the end of the series. What are you going to remember? You know, you're going to remember that he said that about Wade Davis the night they got eliminated. It means nothing.
Rewind the tape to last year. I don't think he said the same thing about Aroldis. I'm telling you, Wade's coming back, Harry. Mark it down.
Let's look at it this way. If you're Jed and you're Theo and you're sitting in the stands and you're sitting and watching CJ come out of the bullpen, you're watching Rondon come out of the bullpen, you're watching Strope come out. You got to have somebody that you can count on. And not to say that those guys can't turn the corner and that CJ Edwards couldn't someday turn out to be an all-star closer. I mean, I don't want to begrudge him that. He's still young and he's a 48th round pick, for goodness sakes.
Don't throw anything at me. Justin Wilson is going to be a key member of this bullpen next year.
You're absolutely right. I mean, something was just lost in translation.
Right.
There's a different language in Detroit than there is in Chicago. I don't know. He's got all the talent and all the stuff in the world, but just couldn't put it together.
He was so good with the Tigers. He was so good. I can't believe that Justin Wilson we saw is the real guy.
Yeah.
Justin Wilson will be a big part of that bullpen next season.
I love the optimism. 312-981-7200. We got about 15 minutes to go here, so if you'd like to say anything to the Cubs, a little congratulations, a little whatever's on your heart tonight as the season comes to an end. Let's get deep, Patty. Let's get emotional. Let's have a moment.
From your soul. Tell us from your soul. Do you have a quick question from another friend of the show? Do you think, and I think I already know the answer, do you think there's any chance they move Madden along, bring in another manager that can get more out of the guys?
No.
Nope.
No.
Oh,
okay.
No.
Oh, that's
no.
an answer.
He's locked up for two more years.
All right.
No, he ain't going anywhere. And he should. He's been fantastic, even though he's not perfect like none of us are, except for you, Harry. You, I think, are actually perfect.
Yeah. In what way?
In every single damn way. Right, Andy?
Yeah. I mean, you know, here's the thing, too. I mean, we've criticized the guy, and more of me is sarcasm, just kind of my way of dealing with the disappointment of some of the moves that you make. But being around the game, as long as I've been around the game, these jobs are not easy. And 9 times out of 10, the guys are making a move with a lot of information behind it. And a lot of preconceived thought about it. And it doesn't work all the time. Baseball is a game built on failure.
Joe Madden freaks out in the playoffs. That's part of
his deal. He does freak out in the playoffs.
That's part of his deal, but I'll take Joe Madden
again.
Until tonight, and we talked about this last night on True Blue in the middle of Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. Joe Madden, 5 straight wins facing elimination games. Dusty Baker, 10 straight losses.
Yeah.
Don't go at Dusty right now.
I'm just comparing. I'm not going at him. I'm great. Don't
go at him.
Paul Sullivan. Me, I
go
love
at him.
Paul Sullivan.
He took it personally
that I said something negative about Lou Piniella. I'm not knocking.
Sully took it personal that you said something negative.
Yeah,
about
he
Lou
said
Piniella?
He said let it go, let it go.
Oh.
Let your Dusty Angst.
I could just see Sully doing that to you too, waving the arm at you.
He the Sully moment.
He was on the radio, but I could feel him moving his arm. That's what I'm going to miss. Like all the great Cubs coverage we get in this city.
Yeah. Well, at least they don't actually ever take the off season off, Harry.
True.
They just keep writing and writing and writing.
Sports are a full time thing. Oh, today, by the way, the 17th day in the history of man that all 4 major sports had a game on the same day.
Had the Cubs won, it would have happened again on Sunday, according to our friend Kenneth Jacobowski.
Look at that.
I'm just saying, had they won.
We just brought it full circle right here on True Blue. One more segment to go.
I'll give you a
circle of trust right here,
720 WGN.
In the nest, the tree of trust.
720 WGN.
It's always tough. You start a journey with all these guys, and, you know, at the end of the day, you know, these last couple days, you don't take anything for granted at all. The stretch, the cage work, because, you know, yesterday could have been our last day. Today's obviously our last day. So you got to enjoy these moments because you don't know how long they last, like I keep saying, but you make a lot of friendships along the way. And, you know, this next week is tough because you kind of just start scratching your head.
That was Anthony Rizzo. This song requested by Harry Tynowitz.
It was a favorite when I was a kid. Yeah. But
he was a cop on the east side of Chicago.
Yeah. He was working in Lake Michigan.
He patrolled Lake Michigan. Yes, he did.
We just celebrate things when the season's over. Win, lose, or draw. This one's somewhere in the middle. Great run to the NLCS. Didn't get the ultimate World Series title, but they'll get it next year. Don't worry about it. No biggie.
They
come right back.
They've come such a long way. It's really remarkable. Theo Epstein is King Arthur. He pulled the sword from the stone.
We're in the middle of a Braves-style run with more World Series. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, the difference is we have actually fans.
That's a good point. We actually enjoy going to the games and supporting the team. And
we don't chop.
And remember,
getting a little spoiled, I will say that.
That's all right.
Remember, True Blue ends tonight, but True Red starts next week.
Very good point. Very good point.
There you go.
Kevin Powell's been covering this baseball team all season long. He's wrapping it up at Wrigley Field. Have you left the friendly confines there yet, KP?
No, I'm in the upper deck down the third base line, second to top row, just chilling for a few minutes, wrapping up some things, waiting to talk to you guys.
Yeah, see, it's always tough to leave the park. You can put it on that you're waiting to talk to us, but you
that
don't.
That is. Like, in like a month or two when we're freezing and there's snow on the ground, we're all just going to be missing baseball. Whether you're, you know, Cubs or Sox fan, you're going to be missing baseball soon. So just soaking in a little bit as the L.A. Dodgers friends and friends and family members of the players are celebrating on Wrigley Field still right now. Sorry to put that image in your guys' heads, but that's what's happening right now.
It's gross. I left in the bottom of the eighth. Couldn't take it.
Hey, KP, what did you see? What did you see tonight in the clubhouse that none of us had a chance to see?
They look drained, guys. They look so exhausted. And maybe you guys did see that, but look, I think they all just were, like how you guys said, indifferent. Like, they gave everything they had. That NLDS was a lot for them. It's been a lot of baseball over the past few years. Chris Bryant was dead honest with us. He's like, look, I'm done. He's like, I'm drained right now. Everything after the championship last year took a lot out of him. He's like, I can barely talk right now. He looked like he could have just curled up on the ground and went to bed in the middle of the clubhouse. So, they're drained, guys. I mean, it's simple as that. Nobody wants to hear that because they're professional athletes, and how in the hell could they possibly tire because they're getting paid millions of dollars? But they're human, and the run that the Cubs have had the past few years, their schedules have been crazy. If you're watching the games, you're exhausted, let alone if you're playing in them. So I think that's understandable. Look, like you said, Carb, three straight NLCSs, and does anyone doubt that they can be right back here next year?
Nope, not at all. And what was any other highlights from inside the clubhouse, Kevin? We're up against the old clock here. What else can you tell us?
Yeah, I would say this. I'm not even saying it's a lock. Lackey's retiring. I'll just say that just from a few little murmurings because some of the guys are like, yeah, who knows if he'll be back? I don't even know unless you guys have seen something on Twitter. Lackey didn't talk to us. I don't even know. It's a sure thing. He's retiring. I don't know if he'll be back with the Cubs, but maybe Lackey goes for it. One more go around. Who knows?
There'll be teams that will give John Lackey a job if he wants to continue to pitch. He had an ERA in the fours, and somebody will pay John Lackey some money to stay. All right. Well, KP, great job. Great job all season long. I know you'll be contributing obviously a ton tomorrow on Roe Show, so we'll hear more. But thanks for jumping on.
All right, guys. Thanks. Talk to you soon.
You're awesome, KP. Thanks.
Kevin Powell out at Wrigley Field. We will.
Does he go by K? He doesn't go by K-Pow?
You can call him K-Pow.
K-Pow?
K-Pow. Ooh. K-Pow.
Can I hear John Lester real quick before we go to take our last break? I just want to hear John Lester. I like hearing John Lester. It says here we got beat by a better team. I just like to hear the powerful, focused, professional words of a John Lester.
I would think you'd prefer a Ronnie Lester.
I do love Ronnie Lester. Let me hear John Lester. Can we get John Lester? Okay, maybe in a second we'll get John.
I'd like to hear Lester Munson.
Here we go. John Lester wrapping up.
We got beat by a better team. We beat them last year, and they beat us this year. So you got to tip your hat sometimes, and you move on. We'll be ready to go in spring training. It's a long ways away. It'll be nice to have a break.
That's all I needed right there. Seriously, we'll be ready to go in spring training. I'm good.
All right.
That guy changed the culture as much as anyone else, Johnny Lester did.
He did.
Yeah, I mean, there's a toughness, there's an attitude. And usually I have found in my experience that pitchers aren't usually the ones that are the leaders in a clubhouse because they only, you know, throw the ball once every 5 days. And it's usually a position player that's got to take the reins there. And, you know, Anthony Rizzo's young in that role, and I think he's developing into quite a leader. But this is one of those rare occasions, I think, where a pitcher came in and really did, as you guys pointed out, set a tone and really set that culture.
Love that guy. Love that guy. World Series champion. We'll take our final timeout right now, and you can say something after that, Harry, and everybody else can before we go. 720 WGN.
You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. I know that many of us are lamenting, perhaps distressed over the end of the Cubs season. I know fellow Cubs fanatic Senator Dan Katowski texted me. He's like, that game sucked. I can actually hear you yelling that the game sucked.
I said it absolutely sucked.
Absolutely sucked. Yes. You look at me like I shouldn't share that.
I don't
that.
Normally use adverbs. I try to stay away from all my writing teachers said just stay away from the adverbs.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, but stay away. They did.
Why
did
you say
absolutely sucked?
Why? Oh.
Well, they're like, well, if you're a good writer, you should be descriptive, you know.
All right, then.
You know, use an adjective.
Well, in this case, I mean, and our guest joining us tonight, by the way, because it was funny. He was in the green room, and I walked up to our guest, and I said, "Are you a Cubs fan?" He goes, "No, I'm a Sox fan."
So are you smiling ear to ear, huh?
I didn't feel like he was gloating about it. Joining us is Renato Mariotti. He's a partner at Thompson Coburn LLP, a former federal prosecutor and a legal analyst on MSNBC. He's been busy today. As a federal prosecutor, he was best known as the first prosecutor in the country to indict and convict a high-frequency trader. Now he has become a leading commentator of President Trump and explainer of the legal issues surrounding the Trump administration. I met you at the Lundy Lunch not too long ago.
That is true.
And I loved the conversation because you were talking about it in a very, everything that you said in regards to what's going on with the constant news with Russia, you were very straightforward. It was unbiased. It was, and that's what people, I think, are kind of, when they hear Trump and Russia, a lot of people's brains go one way or the other. Mm-hmm. Oh, they, you know, Trump was in on it, and other people are like, oh, they had nothing to do with it. You get over it. It was Hillary's fault. So I mean, that's where people's mm-hmm. brains go, and that's what I loved about that conversation was you cut through, and then you're like, this is what's necessary. This is the information that Mueller is trying to gather. This is what he's going to need to go forward with a case. And I love that part of it. But you also have a lot of thoughts on everything that's happening, including news that broke today. What happened today, Renato?
Wow. Well, a lot happened today. First of all, news broke that the president has been personally interviewing United States attorney candidates. So particularly the U.S. attorney candidates in Manhattan and Brooklyn. And for listeners who don't know, what a United States attorney is it's the chief prosecutor in a particular area. So the U.S. attorney in Manhattan is the person who is in charge of all the federal prosecutors in that jurisdiction and all the investigations that they are undertaking. And one of those investigations reportedly is of a Trump business. And I think that is why this is drawing so much criticism. There is traditionally a separation between presidents and United States attorneys. President Obama didn't personally interview any of the U.S. attorneys that he appointed. And I think that there's a concern that there's an appearance that he may be trying to create some sort of loyalty or some sort of personal affinity between him and those chief prosecutors because he had allegedly, according to the former FBI director James Comey, asked Mr. Comey for some sort of loyalty from him.
Right, which is disconcerting if that's what he's going for. And if there are cases that involve him directly. So going for somebody in New York, it just seems, I don't know. He's not about trying to be subtle about anything.
I'm constantly stunned by this because, you know, as a public servant for 9 years, there are things that I had to do assiduously to make sure it passed the smell test. I mean, we had ethics tests we did all the time there. I mean, it was, you know, post Blagojevich, Illinois.
Right.
And so there were so many... laws passed to make sure that we're regulating the behavior of legislators. I mean, very clear line of demarcation between politics and policy and all this stuff. It's just, it offends my sensibility as someone who kind of had to monitor, I think the behavior of legislators who made really bad decisions, but also like the self-imposed ways of looking at our own behavior.
Sense of morality
and a sense of ethics. And that just, and some of it just comes naturally, which it should. And things you would say, well, no, I wouldn't be doing this. I wouldn't be in here because we would look improper. And because I have business interests and this person's going to make a decision about it. And we would literally bend over backwards to make sure there was no sense of impropriety. I'm just stunned that the president of the United States of America repeatedly does this. It doesn't seem like it's real. It keeps occurring.
Well, and part of that, because you mentioned, Renato, that you know, that the president also tweets out the things that he's you know, commenting on or things that, as they develop. That's startling to everybody. It has to mm-hmm. be. It's just it you must look at that and go, I never in my wildest dreams would have thought. I mean, did you ever think that this is how you would find out about policy and what's going on behind closed doors in Washington?
Absolutely not. And I think at times people on the president's own staff are finding out what is happening via tweet, right? You know, we had earlier this week, Lamar Alexander announced that he had come up with a bipartisan deal to save the Affordable Care Act exchanges. And there was met with much fanfare. And then the president tweeted out the next morning that he was against it. And later that day, Lamar Alexander said, well, the president is the one who asked me to, you know, work with Patty Murray to come up with this compromise. It's just not clear at times exactly what is going on with the president and that erratic sort of tweeting behavior, I think, often derails his own plans. So, you know, earlier this year, there was a lot of tweeting about the Russia investigation. We've seen a lot less of that lately, and I think that's due to his lawyers giving him good advice. But some of that was really, I think, giving Mueller and his team stuff to work with because he was revealing his own thoughts and feelings that ultimately could be used against him to establish his state of mind.
I've been curious about this legally, and we'll take a break in a moment, but I've been curious, and I don't know if you've looked at this, in particular, like when he says something or he gets mad at somebody, he'll block tweeters. He'll block Americans from being able to follow him on Twitter, and there's a question about whether or not that's legal to like restrict somebody from getting access because that's where he speaks from is on Twitter. Have you guys looked at that at all?
Well, I will say I have not looked at it, but there are lawsuits pending on that subject because you're not able to, you know, the government should not be able to discriminate against people based upon their viewpoint. That's what the First Amendment is all about.
Right.
But frankly, we are hearing and seeing, I would say, an assault on the First Amendment over the last several months by the President of the United States. I mean, we keep seeing this attack on the media. Saying that, you know, the press, I mean, there's been this talk about jailing journalists and Attorney General Sessions earlier this week when he testified was asked questions about whether or not he would ever, you know, prosecute a journalist for doing their job. And he refused to, you know, answer that question or say that he would not do that. I think that more than ever, you know, people are being attacked for expressing their beliefs. We've had that with the NFL situation with athletes being criticized by the President of the United States for, you know, taking a knee or expressing their opinion. I think it's a dangerous thing in our country. Whatever your political view on one side or the other, I think one thing we should all be able to agree on is that we can express our opinions freely, and that's why we have a press, and that's part of what our country's about.
Well, and that's because, and the other reason that, I mean, all of it's dangerous when you go after the First Amendment, but if for people who don't like certain things and like, yeah, he's right, and we should go after them, we should jail journalists, things will change, and when it goes back the other way, now you've opened the door for that to happen to you as well when you disagree. So, I mean, this is not, you can be angry and want people to pay, you know, whether it's financially or personally be imprisoned. Then what do you do when they come for you?
I just had a flashback to Cheers. Remember, Diane had asked everybody in the bar if they had an informed intellectual position on the matter, and when she said anybody has a two-bit opinion, could you meet me in the other room? And everybody leaves and they join her. So we're all entitled to our opinion and our feelings on them. But it's just, it's incredible to me. It's like when I think just on a practical matter, it is really impossible to get things done, to get policy passed, if you're constantly torpedoing people publicly, if you're negotiating things in private and you're disparaging them publicly. When you've cut deals and you've made progress, it's very, very difficult to get anything done. And then it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Well, you know, Washington's not doing anything. Of course it's not doing anything because you're not working together. And this is the thing. So if you're constantly talking about these areas that are outside the purview of what you should be focusing on, people are out of work, children are living in poverty, families are unsafe, and the dialogue we're having is people who are exercising their freedom of speech with a peaceful protest.
We're going to take a break. And by the way, this is your conversation. This is where it's, you know, use your First Amendment before things change. 312-981-7200. Again, that is 312-981-7200. You can call or text us to that number. Joining me is Senator Dan Katowski, now the CEO and president of ChildServe, an organization that helps children reach their potential, make sure that whatever life brings them, that they won't be behind. And we have in studio with us as well, attorney Renato Mariotti, who is a legal analyst on MSNBC and CNN, a former prosecutor who has really had he's an explainer of legal stuff. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. So thrilled to welcome for the first time on the show, and I hope not the last. I don't know if you have a good time. Hopefully you'll join us again. We have Renato Mariotti in studio. He's a former federal prosecutor and a legal analyst on MSNBC and CNN. Also joining us in studio is Senator Dan Katowski, now the CEO and president of ChildServe. And their gala is coming up next Friday
That's
night.
Right, gala. It's the way to say it.
Gala.
Gala. And I work with someone, April Redzik, who says gala all the time. She shortened it. She didn't call it even the gala. She calls it, we're getting ready for gala.
Can we for gala?
It's a gala. Yeah.
Sounds like that. Sounds like it's the whole day.
Is Patty Vasquez going to be the host at gala?
At the gala,
not the gala. At gala, so Patty's hosting it this year. Mm-hmm. She's our MC, and we're blessed to have her again. Next week, October 27th at Morgan Manufacturing, we're going to have over 500 people in the room, and we're going to raise funds so that children who are living in poverty and who've suffered physical harm and neglect have every opportunity to reach their potential and have the best life possible.
So wonderful.
We're really grateful that Patty do it. She was wonderful last year. She's going to be even better this year.
That's a lot of pressure. Are tickets still available?
You eat pressure for breakfast.
Arr.
Yeah.
Are there tickets still available?
Yeah, they are.
Where can people get
them?
They
can go on www.childserv, childserv.
Why?
There's no E at the end because our work is not done yet.
Excellent.
So childserv.org.
And you can get information about that event. And if you can't make the event, there's also information how you can donate, volunteer. They're always looking for donations. I know that like it's when school starts, the backpacks and school supplies are so important. And again, I know that you've worked with a mattress.
Firm. Yes, they've been great. Yeah. Absolutely. They've had people donate clothes and drop them off at different Mattress Firm locations. And Mattress Firm actually donated beds for our kids and our group homes last year. So they had a comfortable bed to sleep in. Many of them haven't ever had that experience before.
Right.
Sadly.
We don't even think about that.
That is sad.
Yeah.
I met a Marine who told me that he didn't have a real bed until he went to the Marines because he'd always never had his own bed. Either he shared the bed or had to sleep on the floor. So,
wow. That's sad. We had a young man, he's more of a teenager, who's came in our care last week. And he was sleeping on the floor at his sister's. Mm. So we bought him a mattress, right? Because, I mean, it's just a basic human dignity issue, right?
It is.
And it's just that he'd recently been released from prison. He's trying to get his life back in order, and he's with family, and he's out there doing what he needs to do, and he deserves to have a life of dignity, And so there's things like that. But so this event is a wonderful opportunity to showcase the great supporters we have, but also most important, the kids who are in our care. We're going to have one of our clients named Clifton, and he grew up in our group homes, and he's going to college right now, and he's working, and he's overcome so much. It's going to be the first time he's in a suit in his entire life.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and then we have one of our moms. Check this out. She's been a foster parent for close to 25 years. She's had 34 foster children. She's adopted 9 of them and 4 legal guardianship. Yeah, just her name's Mrs. Carter.
Carter.
Yeah, the best.
We're about to take a break, but before we do take a break, I want to take a text for joining our conversation. A listener had a comment or question. What do we have, Michael?
Yeah, so I'm guessing you guys were talking about the NFL a little bit earlier.
Oh, about the First Amendment.
Yes, about the First Amendment. So from the 630, they wanted to make 2 points. One, when they were protesting, these athletes are at work representing the NFL team and the NFL organization in general, and it's the right of the team, they feel like, to restrict political speech at the workplace. And if it is fair for a company to fire a CEO or another employer for posting an opinion on their own social media, then it's okay to punish employees at work for stating their own opinion. That's what they feel like.
Well, I don't necessarily disagree with that. I think my comment is not that employers can't restrict what people say that work for them, but that the president of the United States should have better things to do than to spend his time criticizing the political speech of people, whether they're at work or not. You know, we have people in Puerto Rico right now who don't have electricity, who don't have clean water. And right now the president of the United States should be focused on that problem and other problems that people face instead of focusing attention on political speech, because it suggests that is trying to silence their speech is an important issue when we have far, far more important things facing people in this country.
So what is the definition of political speech?
Well, what I would say is it's speech that touches on issues of public concern. And so actually as a legal matter, you have greater political, you have greater legal protection when you are talking about political topics versus, let's say, commercial speech. So in other words, somebody advertising Jiffy Lube or whatever, that does receive First Amendment protection. You have the right to advertise your product, but it's subject to less protection than someone, for example, protesting police brutality.
Well, and that was something that people, you know, posted a lot of copy and pastes on social media about. Well, what about when the NFL fined this player for wearing green shoes or this time? That actually is in the rule book as far as altering their uniforms without permission from the NFL and from the teams. So that's that. And the other thing, as far as their employer goes, the NFL has said that they're not going to restrict the players from doing this during the national anthem. So as far as that goes, their bosses have already said that they give their approval. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is MSNBC and CNN commentator, contributor. We have Renato Mariotti, who is a former prosecutor, now an attorney here in Chicago, has been an attorney, and we were dazzled by his resume, aren't we, Senator Katowski?
My God, I met him before he was famous.
Oh, there you go.
You know, we get a meeting, and he was going through sort of a vision quest, and look at him now. It's outstanding.
Plus, we were grilling him about the preamble and of the Constitution, yeah, and all kinds of things.
This is for people who love policy, who are wonky. This is like... This is a thrill for Patty.
We're nerds.
This is okay.
We're
total nerds. Stuff.
Oh my gosh! Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, can we talk about the Constitution? Yeah.
Yes.
Very
come
good.
On. Come on. How do we? Because I want to know. Well, we'll talk about that later. Because I know that you mentioned earlier that Trump tweeted out about a Russian dossier. Mm-hmm. Like I said, when I hear Russia, because people are so, they have their opinions. Everyone's yelling about this, and then obviously there's information about whether or not President Obama sat on information he was getting because he didn't want to come out and seem like he was influencing the election. What happened today or yesterday, whatever you want to look at it.
So the president tweeted about a dossier that had been published some time ago about that contains a number of, it's very lengthy, contains many allegations about the president. Many of your listeners may not even be familiar with this dossier, and that's why I don't understand why the president was drawing attention to it in a tweet. But essentially, it's a dossier that was commissioned reportedly by a Republican as opposition research, later was funded by a Democrat, or at least that's what the media says. It's a long document, contains extremely salacious and controversial allegations about the president, but a lot of them are involving collusion with the Russians and so on. And the president today suggested that Russia, in fact, paid for or commissioned this document, which seems odd on its face because it's a document that is suggests that the president is somehow compromised by the Russians. So I don't know what to make of it. But it certainly generated discussion, particularly since it came on the heels of the co-founders of the opposition research agency that created this dossier not refusing to testify before Congress. And essentially, what's going on in Congress is there are numerous investigations that are going on, and one of those investigations is being headed by a man named Devin Nunes, who's head of the House Intel Committee. He has recused himself from the Russia investigation, but he's conducting his own independent sort of one-person investigation of this Russia dossier. And the founders of that agency were very concerned about letting their client be publicly revealed. I imagine that's bad for business in the opposition research world. But it, you know, their refusal to testify today generated a lot of controversy, particularly when paired with the president's tweet about the origins of the dossier.
Interesting. Yikes. Sounds like sometimes when people have opposition research coming out against them, the best tactic they have is to go on the assault about the research that's about to get out there.
Right.
Like, you know, when George Bush released his own book talking about his previous drug use. You know, so it's kind of similar, I think, and not that the current president had done any drugs or anything like that. But sometimes if you see something that's going to be come out and it's going to make you not look as positive as you'd like, you'll come out and attack the information.
It's like knowing.
That would explain why,
right?
You know, he's doing that.
It's like having I'm just trying to figure this out in my own mind because I always have to make comparisons. It's like having a bottle of Coke that you know you dropped on the floor, and before you open it all the way, you open it slowly and let some of the air out.
Yeah,
some of the pressure out.
It's a smart political tactic. I mean, he's no dummy when it comes to this stuff. If he thinks something is going to come after him and make him look bad, he'll definitely come out and attack it and try and discredit it.
Well, there definitely is potentially some legs with this dossier. There's been news that Mueller interviewed the creator of the dossier, who's a British spy named Steele. He was almost like a character in a James Bond movie or something.
It's not Remington.
No, not Remington Steele. I think it's Christopher Steele, but a former British spy. And you know, there have been some allegations in not the most salacious ones, but some of the allegations in the dossier have been corroborated or confirmed. And so there is potentially some legs there. But like you said, I mean, it's not just in politics, but I will tell you, as a former federal prosecutor who investigated and prosecuted a lot of folks, one of the common tactics that folks who are under investigation take is to try to, you know, create distractions or, you know, go after the investigation in some way or you know, sort of change the narrative. It may be effective as a PR tactic. It is very, very ineffective at derailing federal prosecutors, in my experience.
And people are wondering, I know obviously on social media I see people, you know, posting pictures of Mueller, you know, please save us, or, you know, or other people who hate Mueller and, oh, well, he was there for these other, you know, sort of nefarious things anyway. He's not going to be able to do anything. I thought you did a great job at that luncheon that I heard you speak at about what, you know, what it's going to take, because it is very, he has to be meticulous, obviously. And the things that, these sort of big grand things that some people are hoping for are not quite what he's going after or what he's going to necessarily accomplish.
I think that's fair to say. I mean, Robert Mueller is not only acting here as a federal prosecutor. Well, let me start as a starting point. Federal prosecutors, like any prosecutor in the country, have to prove cases beyond a reasonable doubt. And I know that doesn't sound like a big deal, but trust me, as somebody who had to investigate and prosecute and try cases before juries, getting 12 random people to agree on anything is not an easy thing. It is a high burden when that is a proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And they have to do that. You would have to do that by presenting evidence that is admissible in court. You know, testimony from people firsthand who know things, documents that can be authenticated. So you can't just throw some dossier in front of people. He's got to actually, you know, have evidence that can prove something to this jury. So, you know, typically federal prosecutors are careful, they're precise, and they're only going to bring charges if they feel that they can prove them beyond a reasonable doubt. So given all of that, Robert Mueller, I expect, is going to be very thoughtful, methodical, and, you know, he is not going to be this grand, for people who are critics of the administration, he's not necessarily going to be the grand savior that people are looking for. So when I'm on Twitter talking to my followers about it, one thing I tell them is, you know, if you're unhappy with the way that America is, don't count on any man, including Robert Mueller, to save America for you. Yes. Get off your butts and save it yourselves.
Yeah, if you got rid of the soda tax, you can save a lot more than how much you pay for Coke. I mean, really, that was a groundswell. That was a marketing campaign from both sides. Everybody went at it hard and heavy. People rose up. You know, the polling numbers came out, and they reversed their decision on the Cook County Board. But people don't do that when, like right now, there are services that are going to be cut across the state of Illinois, and everyone's going to go, oh, that sucks for you. It's really a shame.
I'll tell you how much people love soda.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Pop. And but there's, I mean, you think about it. You can. What was your favorite soda
growing up?
You drank growing up. Yeah.
Probably. I like all the different flavors. I would say I love Dr. Pepper was sort of a special thing.
Right.
Yeah. I love Dr. Pepper too.
Yeah. I loved 7 Up. Yeah. That was my favorite. You know. And then, but I knew my Uncle Ray. He loved Pepsi. Mm-hmm. He had like these cartons of Pepsi. You go over to his house and, oh, you gotta try some Pepsi, and so I think people looked at it like, you're coming after my soda, you know, right?
It's a treat. It was always a treat.
It's a treat. That's and it's funny. Like, you know, I don't know, Renato, what was your favorite soda?
You know, it's so funny, I went down to Texas when I was a kid and I drank Mr. Pibb
for the first time.
I'm like, oh my god, this is like Dr. Pepper on steroids or something.
Totally.
I love that stuff. I couldn't get enough of it. I drank so much Mr. Pibb I was like 10 pounds heavier.
It's like taxing. It's like taxing watching the movie It's a Wonderful Life. You're like, what are you doing? Well, and even though soda's not good for you, it's just,
people to
me, doing something across the board would have been much more well received. People have said that to me who oppose taxes to the to the ninth degree. They said, well, if it's something general across the board, it would have been more acceptable to me.
But yeah.
Like, what about my soda?
Yeah, they isolated it to the point where people could have a laser focus, and they really did use that energy. You can change the world because we changed the tax. More with our guests. We have some text coming in about our conversation regarding Mueller. We can talk about the First Amendment. We have attorney Renato Mariotti. He's a contributor and consultant on CNN and MSNBC. And we also have Senator Dan Katowski in studio with us, and an expert on many things as well. We should get to know Renato some more, too, when we come back on 720 WGN. Our number, 312-981-7200. This is your conversation. Join us more in a moment. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Senator Dan Katowski. It's really good to have you back tonight, sir. I know it's been a while. You've been very busy, and I appreciate your time. This is not easy. These late night hours are not easy. I often, after talking to you, and I know that you're busy, you get up early in the morning, you have a full-time job. At any time you're here, we're so gracious for your generosity of time. So I've told other regulars on the show, you know, please pace yourself, because, I mean, I do this. But I'm this is my job. This is, you know, and like Renato Mariotti, who joins us, Esquire, by the
it's
way.
It's like an addiction to be on this show. Healthy. It's a good thing. It's just that the opportunity to come on, it's a real blessing. Your friendship has been, but
I appreciate it.
It's all, we've always had a lot of fun here, and you learn a lot and get an opportunity to meet people who are outstanding guests like Renato. It's great.
Well, and I met him because Dave Lundy became a regular on my show, and he has these great lunches every month. And so I saw Renato speak at the last lunch, and I was like, I would love to have you on the show. I'd heard about you before. I don't watch any news. No, I honestly don't know. I think a lot of people are probably like that now. I do a lot of reading. I read a lot of, like, today. I want to know more about what happened in Niger. I want to know why we have green berets coming home in caskets. I wanted to know what's going on. And there was actually a pretty good piece in Esquire, of all places, that I thought did a very nice job of saying, this is why we were there. This is what those soldiers were doing. This is some of what happened. And, you know, do some research, find out. I mean, the emotional part of it, the argument that's going on right now. Okay, we've kind of had that discussion. I think General John Kelly, in a very emotional way, discussed it. It's outside of us. It's embarrassing that we're even having an argument about the deceased soldiers' families. But why we are there, I think we owe it to the soldiers,
absolutely,
to the men and women in uniform who do a job that most of us can't or won't do. Find out why they're there. And that's what you were talking about earlier, is that, you know, if you're looking for one person to save you, or this is the argument you want to get into, learn more, be informed, and be involved.
I agree. And, you know, we're in a time now where there has been a lot of criticism of a free press. And one thing I do tell people is, you know, and I'm frankly, I do a lot with print journalists as well, and I'm frequently sort of quoted there or write things myself. And I think that listeners should be supporting the free press that is investigating and doing and reporting on the issues that they care about. You know, so often we don't think of, you know, when we're saying, oh, be active, you know, part of being active and part of our democracy is having a free press that reports on what's going on in Niger, or reports on what the president is doing. And so really supporting the press, I think, is part of our civic responsibility.
I had when I get into conversations on social media, and anyone who follows me on my personal Facebook page knows that when, sometimes I'll see something and I'll be like, oh, well, have you considered this article in Fortune or Forbes or this article, you know, and then when they argue, I'm like, well, and then I read all these articles and I send them, and then they try to, like, oh, I can copy and paste too, and they'll paste something from John Cass. Okay, that would be the exact same as saying, well, Patty Vasquez says, because John Cass and I are both commentators. We are not journalists, at least not in the form in which we present information and conversation. So I that's one thing. When I saw that, and it was a friend of mine from grade school, I was like, we started out with the same education, and you are using an article by John Cass to support your argument, your conversation. So that's just reiterating your opinion, not the facts.
There will come a time, I think, I hope, that there's just so much, there's so much content out there. It is a full-time job to be vigilant about information, vigilant about your government, vigilant about your community. It's a full-time job. And I can see how people be overwhelmed. But
yes,
I'm hoping they'll come to a point where they're like, where the cream will rise to the top, and you'll be like, all right, this is where I can go to for where the most well-researched and most as objective as possibly can be stories are going to be. And I've, you know, I've searched all over the place, and it's just, but there's just so much content that's out there. And I think people like go say, I'm going to go there and I'm going to hear this and that. And I don't know. I just hope we get to back to a place, and I'm not talking about like just a few select newspapers and radio stations or TV. I'm just saying that people will know after a period of time that these are well-established, credible news outlets that you can go to for information that is comprehensive and thoughtful and fair.
Well, and that's a great thing about Renato is that, you know, I know that people have their opinions about MSNBC and CNN. And when I heard you speak at that luncheon, I loved how just it was all these are the facts. This is the legal aspect of this is what I'm sharing. There's no bias to it because it's the law. I mean, that's why people like when, you know, the president, as much as they might not have liked his choice for the Supreme Court, he picked somebody who is a conservative, a strict constitutionalist.
I would say, yeah, he's a very conservative justice. He's probably, if he's not the most conservative justice, probably the second most in the court.
We might talk about that in a little bit if you stay past one. I don't know if you're up
we'll,
for that.
We'll see how we do.
We have a listener who some comments. Sure, we have a few listeners who have comments. Michael, you said there was something.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, a lot of great text messages just coming through here on the text line, 312-981-7200. First of all, from the 773, the story about Haribo Gummy Bear Factory getting an astronomical tax break with the offer of 55 jobs, and they wanted to explain why that is good for Illinois.
Senator, you might know a little bit more about how companies are lured to the state, like this deal for that we're offering to Amazon. I know we just lost a possibility with Toyota. I don't know about the Gummy Bear offer, but... Are you familiar?
Well, I'm not as familiar, but I think it's ridiculous because I think we have a different set of standards for small and mid-sized businesses and larger corporations. And what people don't realize, there is a massive loophole that you can drive a semi through for these larger corporations where you don't necessarily have to pay any corporate income tax if you're based here, but your profits are in other states or they're multiple nations, you don't pay any taxes. So everybody who's in this state who's runs a small business, a small retail establishment, or they're entrepreneurs, they're paying taxes as LLCs, as S-Corps, and they're the ones who are basically shouldering the burden. And then someone comes into town and they say, well, yeah, we're going to create this amount of jobs, and but we want to limit what you have on a clawback provision, meaning the money that we would have to pay back as a corporation if we don't achieve our goals. So they put these unbelievable restrictions on it. So that's the thing about this deal here that's so frustrating. It's like, yeah, well, it's great if Amazon came here, but a guy who made several hundred million in the sale of his company, I know this guy, and he said, look, I didn't create my business to create jobs. I did it to solve a problem and to make a profit. Right.
Right.
He said, and there's a notion out there that just because a business is profitable, they're going to keep creating jobs. Now, that may be an incidental component of that, but it really shed a light on me for this, because here's the deal. At the end of the day, they're responsible to their shareholders, not necessarily their employees.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, the lifeblood of our economy are these small businesses in the state of Illinois. They create thousands of jobs and they take care of families, and we treat them differently. We treat them like they are not as important as some of these larger corporations that come in here, and they're basically involved in this unbelievably massive shakedown of the state of Illinois. So I don't know why we'd be cutting deals with them.
I miss having you in the legislature. I need to take a break here and check in with our guests and see how long they're staying, because this is a great conversation. I know that we've got more texts coming in. 312-981-7200. I don't know what to do to help Renato stay. I'm like,
he's going
to
stay.
He's going to stay? I don't want to pressure him.
He's got to take the suit coat off, though. He's going to stay.
More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Renato Mariotti. He's an attorney, former prosecutor, federal or state prosecutor?
Federal.
It just seems, I feel like I need to like watch myself.
You need to raise your game. That's what it is.
That's always the case. That's why I bring in good guests, so that I sound good.
And that doesn't imply that you haven't raised your game. It just means that when you have someone of this stature, it's
keep raising the
stakes
bar.
Stakes are high. Mm-hmm. It's like Cubs versus Dodgers.
Exactly. Renato is also a commentator on MSNBC and CNN. Senator Dan Katowski joins us. He's the president and CEO of ChildServe. There's an event coming up next Friday that I will be hosting. hosting. It's a wonderful event. You get to hear stories from people who benefited from the amazing services at ChildServe. Go to childserve.org. That's childserv.org. They've left the E off because their work is not done.
No, we have a lot of work to do.
It's an important event. We've been talking about a lot of things. I want to make sure we get to any of the texts. So we had, I know one listener wanted to join the conversation in regards to Mueller. Michael?
Yes, absolutely. From the 252, which is, I looked it up, in North Carolina.
Hi. Hi, North Carolina.
Awesome. So they wanted to ask if our guest, our attorney guest, feels that Trump, as a result of his ongoing blatant packing of foot soldiers into the New York District Attorney's offices, well, do you feel that Mueller will have an additional evidence of Trump's obstruction of justice?
Wow, that's so very specific. Okay, wow.
That may be one of my Twitter followers.
That's great.
So
thank
I tweeted you about this. So I don't. I was talking earlier about how federal prosecutors tend to be careful about what they charge. One thing I will tell you, when I was a federal prosecutor, you're always trying to charge very narrow crimes. So you know, people think that there's gonna be some grand conspiracy that's charged. Actually, that's more difficult to prove than something that's very straightforward. So what I expect is the obstruction of justice case that Comey is investigating, which he clearly is from all that we've heard publicly, Mueller is investigating regarding the firing of Comey, which we've heard a lot about. I think it's going to be focused on the firing of Comey. I think all of this other stuff, I would be surprised if it is used as evidence there. I suspect that some of his actions, like, for example, the actions related to Preet Bharara, we don't know what he's investigating, but if what he's investigating there is related to a Trump business or somehow related to operations with Russia, that I could see potentially being used as, I would say, potentially part of a larger scheme to obstruct justice. And I think the argument there would be, I think, Mr. Bharara said that the president had called him, tried to establish like a personal connection with him, and then had assured him he wouldn't be fired, and then changed his mind. So it's potentially something that I think he could use, but I think that the charge will be focused on obstruction related to the firing of Comey.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a lot. It's going to take a long time, too. I mean, people want it to happen right away, but there's a lot to go through.
And how long do you estimate that this will take?
It's going to last into next year, and how long into next year, I don't know. But, you know, the federal investigations take a long time. People don't realize they often take many years. Now, here, I don't think that's going to happen. I actually think that Mueller appears to be moving at a very brisk pace, but look what we've heard just in the last few weeks. You know, we've been hearing about all sorts of interviews he's been conducting. I mentioned earlier the creator of that dossier, Corey Lewandowski, who was the president's campaign manager for a period of time. He interviewed Sean Spicer, the former White House press secretary, recently. So there's all these interviews that are taking place. I think Rance Priebus was interviewed recently, if I recall correctly. So all these people are being interviewed. Those interviews are going to generate additional leads that are going to probably cause Mueller, if in my experience it corresponds to his, it's going to raise other, people who potentially he's going to want to interview. It's going to, create in his mind additional documents that need to be subpoenaed. And then the process starts all over again. You're going to have more documents, more interviews. There's always a point as a federal prosecutor where I'll call it, you draw a line. In other words, there are some people I investigated that I could have investigated for the rest of my life because there was so much to investigate.
Wow.
But at a certain point, you're like, okay, I've got this guy on this set of crimes. That's enough. We got him. But in this, with something of this importance, I think that Mueller may investigate every lead just, as a public service so that this matter can kind of be fully put to rest.
Are you surprised in any way? You're surprised by the president's actions as a federal prosecutor?
Ooh. Yeah, well, I am. I mean, I am shocked at his interactions with the FBI director. You know, I will say, I mean, people can question, and certainly the president has been questioning the integrity of the FBI director. But, if you take his account at face value, and I think he appears to me to be a credible witness, I think people in both parties have said that. The way that the president undercut the independence of the FBI and spoke to him about an ongoing investigation and to ask about his loyalty. Whether or not that is ultimately charged by Mueller, it's deeply disturbing. And it suggests that the president views his relationship with law enforcement to be like his relationship with people and businesses that he runs, which, sure, I could understand how if you're the head of the Trump organization, you may want the guy running a particular Trump tower to be loyal to you, and you may want to have that guy sort of in your control, but sort of doing your bidding. But when it's the director of the FBI and you're the president of the United States, that's a very concerning thing.
What are people in the legal world in your universe? How do you feel as far as the way the Constitution is, you know, the safety of it, as far as what we've talked about, the First Amendment in particular, or what this means going forward legally?
Wow. Well, it's a humongous thing. I will tell you that more than ever, I mean, as an American, I'll start at a very broad level. One thing that I'm concerned about as an American is that we've been divided as a country. We're coming apart, and, you know, we've learned a lot about this Russian operation in the United States. And in my opinion, that really needs to be a bipartisan issue. No matter where you are in the political spectrum, on the left or on the right, the fact that a foreign adversary was trying to divide us as a country, first of all, and secondly, trying to interfere in our electoral process, should be something that everyone can come together on. But the reason the Russians, what they did was effective, is they played upon our divisions with each other. Mm-hmm. They would be sponsoring, you know, speech on both sides of the debate and trying to get people pitted against each other, because as a country, we're weaker when we're divided. And what I see now is in the administration is efforts to divide us further. And I think there have been very aggressive attempts to undermine the rights of certain groups of Americans. And, you know, I think we have the Muslim ban is one. We have obviously actions taken regarding the Dream Act recipients, and I've written an op-ed about that and how I think that could potentially violate the Due Process Clause. There's numerous. I mean, we could go on and on and on. And honestly, what I would say is this administration and what is going on in this administration is somebody who's following the legal issues surrounding it. It's like a treadmill. I mean, I'm somebody. Look, I'm into fitness. I lost a lot of weight in my life. I've been on treadmills a lot. It's so hard to keep up. And I think what it's done is it has really lowered our tolerance, raised our tolerance for outrageous behavior. It's raised our tolerance for things that lessen our constitutional protections, violate our constitutional norms, because we are seeing it bombarded on a daily basis. Right. And it makes it so we're constantly going from one thing to the next, and we can't focus on the seriousness of some of these actions.
That's the thing, is that that was why, like I said, I realized this morning the thing that we're not talking about when it comes to the four Green Berets who were killed in Niger is why were we there? And so I think that it is a personal obligation to, you have to, as a citizen, start to go, okay, this is what is being argued about. What's the underlying issue here? What's the thing Completely. That I need to know more about?
Absolutely.
And it's important.
So, and just, I can't emphasize enough, you know, Governor Quinn was someone who went to every single military funeral. He didn't advertise it. He just went.
Right.
As a sign of respect for the service that people had provided to our country to protect our freedoms and our security. They gave the ultimate sacrifice. He didn't advertise it. He just did it. And you know, when someone passes due to the fact that they were fighting for us and fighting for our freedoms and their families are suffering because of that loss, and then someone is, you know, beating on their chest and saying, hey, I called them. You know, it's like, no, there's a quiet dignity that's attached to the office of the president. And there's a respect that you have with families. It's a, you know, there is no words that politicians can offer that are going to bring their children back or bring their husbands back or their wives back. There are no words. Maybe you can call and say, you know, thank you for the service and we want to honor the life of your loved one, the way they've honored our country, but it's not going to bring them back.
Right.
And just this whole notion that some politicians have, that they have like this this magical way of healing people because they're calling. And they, you know, that's just this is where I was raised. You know, if someone's suffering, you know, and or someone died, you would go to a wake. You wouldn't tell everybody you're going to the wake. You would be there as a sign of respect. And this whole notion that you have to brag to the whole world that you're calling families. No, you know what? This is what you should be doing.
Right.
It's just, it's an expectation. It's not something to have a press release about.
Carry on our conversation in just a moment. 312-981-7200. I believe we've locked the door and Renato cannot leave. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in our Allstate Showcase studio. This beautiful, it doesn't even feel like it's October. I mean, this feels like, it's just wonderful. There was baseball in October. It's a beautiful night for it, regardless of the outcome, Senator.
I forgot about it already.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
I forgot about it already.
Did you have a wound there? Let me put some lemon in there.
I'm at the game I want to be at.
That's right.
This is my game seven.
You and I are such political and legal junkies.
This is cooler. There's like, we get to talk about stuff that's like relevant.
It's important. Yeah. And to be our expert tonight, we have Renato Mariotti.
He went to the University of Chicago and Harvard.
And Yale.
Yale.
Oh, Yale. That's right. You didn't get into Harvard. So,
wow. How incredibly proud your parents. What a tremendous success story. Congratulations on all that. Do you have any siblings?
I don't. And frankly, I wish I did, but I will say that
just rub their noses in it. Look,
no,
what I did.
No, not that. But, you know, I would not have been able to go to college if we had other kids. I mean, my parents both worked two jobs to help put me through, high school, just to be in the high school I was in college. I think that if we had more brothers and sisters, I would not be able to do that.
It's interesting that you say you wish you did, because I grew up an only child, and sometimes I think I wish I had two. But I mean, like, first of all, my parents are crazy. I don't know if that would have helped or hurt me to have another kid in the house. I don't know.
You'd but, share experiences.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is. It's interesting though. But when you say I wish I mean, like, my husband has five sisters. So, like, I'm not saying that's why I married him, was to have, like, I didn't think it through, Senator. It's a lot. Wow. I didn't realize until I got, like, I was.
My mom is six, no, five. She has five, too.
Yeah.
And a brother.
It's intense. Well, okay, this is actually a good transition for us, because my husband, as the only boy in a family of six siblings, you know, when the story with Harvey Weinstein broke, he's been married. We've been married for 17 years, and we've been together for 22. And throughout my career, he's known that I have put up with a lot as a stand-up comic at various jobs, waiting tables. I mean, in the service industry, the things that that have happened, it's in the hundreds for a lot of women with what we go through. Bosses that one boss who took a beer, I had a pocket on my shirt, and he stuck it in the pocket and rubbed it against my breast and said, "Here, let me help you cool off. And, you know, I wish that shirt wasn't there," you know, that kind of stuff. That's just like one of them, one of hundreds. I told this story last week that there was a manager of a club in the South suburbs who said, "Hey, you know, I'd book you more often, but you're always working at Zany's. Are you effing the owner? How do I work out a deal like that?" You know, and that's, you know, that, so he had to watch that and to see these stories come out of Hollywood. You know, people always ask me why I didn't move to LA. And one of the things, it wasn't just like, I thought that would be worse, but like the idea of always having to be young and having to be skinny. I can't even imagine the psychological trauma. I can't imagine the careers that never moved forward, not just because of Harvey Weinstein, but people like him throughout the industry in Hollywood. Do you, I mean, when you saw that break, what were your thoughts as a lawyer and what that looks like?
Wow. It's you know, honestly, what it made me think about was when I was a prosecutor, I investigated people who molested children.
Oh.
And they would do all sorts of things to dissuade children from reporting what they did. And it was amazing for me to see the subtle ways in which men were using somewhat similar tactics to prevent adult women from reporting what they did. And I got to say, you know, there was this whole Me Too movement on Twitter. And, you know, what it reminded me of, there was this man that I met when I was in college named Peter Edelman, who had worked with John F. Kennedy and Robert Kennedy. And he said the difference between John F. Kennedy and Robert F. Kennedy is John F. Kennedy saw everything as numbers, and Robert F. Kennedy saw these problems as people. And that's what it reminded me of when I saw all of these stories from friends of mine, women I know, talking about the experiences that they had, because it's one thing to see numbers and to know statistics and to know that there's a lot of sexual assault and there's a lot of sexual violence. It's another thing to see the stories of people you know and you care about recounting in detail what happened to them, and it has an impact.
It does, and I just flashed to something that that occurred when the first time I went to Springfield. I made the senator really uncomfortable because because it feeds into your psyche, and you think, well, if this is the way I get things done, or if this is how I have to do things, well, then I'll just build that up. And I wore a dress that I actually own several of. It's like a wrap dress. No, it made you uncomfortable when I said, well, you know what, this is the way people are going to talk to me. I may as well, because. But when I go to Springfield now, I'm much more like I never wear heels. I always wear jackets. I want to be taken seriously, and I want to have those conversations. But it plays into your mind of like, if this is the only way I can get a story done or get someone's attention, because it's been the way my career has been for almost 20 years. If I'm on stage, I'll have a booker say, you should show off your body more. Or I had a booker who said, you shouldn't wear dresses on stage. You have thunder thighs. It's you're constantly like, I had a job where I couldn't, there was the boss had physically assaulted me, had groped me at an event. And like, it was time to come in for meetings and things like that, I never knew how to dress because, he would tell me that it was a good thing I was hot, or that it was a good thing that other people that worked there liked me because he wasn't sure if I was talented enough to be there. And so I didn't know how to dress. I was like, if I dress too nice, does that encourage him to say things to me? If I don't dress nicely enough, does that jeopardize my job? So you're constantly questioning what you do and how you do it. So it's you can never relax ever. So there you go. You guys are just
it must be awful.
It's grueling. Let's take a break here and see if I think Renato probably wants. He's like, I'm good. Let me get out of here for the last half hour. More after this. By the way, you mentioned your Twitter account. How do people follow you on Twitter and social media?
Sure. I have a strange name, but my first name is Renato, R-E-N-A-T-O. My last name is M-A-R-I-O-T-T-I. Good thing about a strange name is there aren't a lot of us on Twitter or Facebook.
You got that Twitter handle right there. And Google him. Find out more about him. He's been an excellent guest, and I hope that he didn't resent that I locked him in here. Mm-hmm. Hopefully he'll join us again. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Senator Dan Katowski. He's the CEO and president of ChildServe, an organization helping at-risk children reach their potential. We have an amazing event coming up next Friday night. You can go to childserve.org. That's childserve.org. Mm-hmm. Leave the E off because
our work isn't done yet.
And thank you so much.
We're on the Facebook, too.
On the Facebook.
The Facebook.
Find their event
page. And the
page.
Twitter.
The Twitter.
The Twitter. And the Snapchat.
I have to find another dress for that event. I don't want to wear the same thing I wore last year.
God forbid.
Are you going to wear the same thing you wore last year?
Not the same dress. Yeah, I'm going to have a suit. I'm not going to wear your dress from last year. I think I may get a new suit for it.
Really?
Yes, because I was out recently and a guy said to me, he goes, I had like a hole in my elbow.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, what's up? And I was like, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, this is the second time I've seen you with a suit that's got a hole in it.
Like, it was the same suit?
No.
It
was another one. I had it kind of sewed up. And he's like, you should probably get a new one. And, when I first became a senator, I had a couple new suits. I haven't gotten a new one for about 9 or so years. So okay. I should probably get one.
Yeah. Now. Well, I'm going to do something. Esmeralda has done this where you can rent a dress, right, Es?
Yeah.
Esmeralda. Wow.
Yes. It's very fancy. It's called Rent the Runway. And you can get something as casual as for just maybe a day party or something like that, or something like a gown.
Cool.
And you can rent it for as long as you need, and it's way cheaper. And you can get designers, like very, very, very expensive designers.
I think I'm going to do that.
Can you rent a suit?
Yes.
Yeah.
You can rent a tux, but I didn't know you can rent suits.
I think tuxedo rentals, they have like less.
I would like to get a really sharp suit.
Yeah.
Like a, like a gray suit with a pocket square.
Although with that, because depending on the suit, it has to be tailored.
That's true.
That's
true.
Really what does it.
It does. It's like you don't want it like flared out. And And that's the thing. That's the challenge. I mean, first of all, it's easy to dress as a guy. Because if you have a suit, you're like, okay, I can wear this. It's just a selection of shirts and ties.
Yes.
Right? And when I finally figured out how to match my ties to my suits, that was life-changing.
It's a good day.
Know? Yeah, with the shirt and the tie and like, yeah.
It's like you need to make a statement that way too.
Well, it's pretty easy. It's like you can go from navy to black suit and like, oh, and then you just change up the tie. But like, oh yeah, you look different.
But you want a gray suit?
I'd like a gray suit. I'd like a gray suit.
Like a dark charcoal kind of?
Yeah, like? Something like that.
That sounds great.
I'd like something a little more dignified. I could use some dignity. I could use something.
We all could. Believe me. Definitely. We all could. Michael, how many suits do you have?
I own maybe one suit, and it is from my dad's. I've always wanted the nice $1,000 suit that I hear. I know. I've no reason to wear a suit though. So what's the
point? People don't wear them as often. Yeah. Do you have slacks in a blazer? Do you have blazers?
No.
Have you not been to any weddings?
I have not been to a wedding since for many years. Whenever I go to a wedding, I just wear the white shirt and the tie, which is kind of like, you know, the cash wedding.
Going,
yeah, but you got a nice suit. Right? Where's your backpack?
Well, I did live in Utah for 3 years, so.
Hey, how'd this guy get in?
But man. I always hear about like every guy needs that one classic suit, and I'm still waiting to, you know, jump on that.
Michael, completely. You should go to Macy's.
Macy's.
Just like watch for their deals because sometimes they have crazy deals on nice suits, and I think they can tailor it for you and all that. They
really?
Have dudes up there that'll help you out.
You know, my mom has been trying to send me Macy's coupons for the last 6 months, so maybe I should take her up.
Yeah,
on
they
that.
Have a sale like every week. It's ridiculous.
And plus, and your mom can send you coupons if you just go and you don't have those. You go to there's an app called Coupon Cabin, or Coupon Sherpa is the one I use. I use Coupon Sherpa. And it has like all these retailers. Like if you're at Kohl's, if you're in line, you remember. What are you laughing at me for? I love Old Navy.
I can get you up Mount Everest for half price. Sorry.
Coupon Sherpa. I love that app. You can be standing in line and go, oh, wait a minute. I have a coupon for this place, like Bed Bath & Beyond.
So what's the cost of Coupon Sherpa?
Is nothing.
It nothing?
Nothing.
So you just, you had access to all the coupons that are out there.
All the coupons that are, I mean, that they provide to Coupon Sherpa. Yeah, it's great. Sometimes there's Macy's, The Gap, Old Navy, Kohl's, and if you, like glasses, food sometimes too.
Oh man, I downloaded an app. You get rebates.
What?
You just have to take pictures of the receipt that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they have certain things that are for rebates. And then you just click on the thing and it gives you the rebate. Mind you, sometimes it's like.
That would be helpful. I'm so awful at that. Yeah.
Sometimes it's like 25 cents for just even going into the store, like 50 cents. But some are like $3, $2, and it adds up.
And where does it go into? Is it going into an account?
Yeah, it goes into an account. You have to get to $20. But still, it's like it's not costing you to do anything. It's giving you money.
That's cool. Speaking of which, did you ever decide on an app that helps you invest? I know you were looking for information on that.
No.
Me neither.
I have one, but I don't know what to do. I need to pay everybody, and then I can invest. I need to pay all my outstanding bills, and then I can invest properly.
That's what Susie Orman says, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we started to do. Pay once I left the Senate, I was finally able to pay off some bills. we got to pay off our bills and start to save a little bit. But yeah, we haven't made any major investments lately. So the toupee has completely been shelved.
People are very excited about the stock market reaching over 23,000.
Oh my God, it's never happened before.
But 22,000 had never happened either.
Know,
and neither did 21,000 or 20,000.
Here's the thing though. It's like there's a Malcolm Gladwell had this great podcast about, there's this notion that like things like GDP and the stock market and that has the greatest reflection on what kind of progress we're making.
Uh-huh.
And there's a phrase that he used, and I think he called it capitalization or capitation or something like that. The whole idea that if you work hard and you're smart, you will do better than your parents, right?
Right.
That if you work hard and you're smart, you'll do better than your parents. And he said, in America, that's not the way it used to be. And so this, like when people cite like GDP as a reflection of how great things are, it really isn't economically. And you need to look at people's like, look, if I'm going to go just like my parents did, I'm going to work hard and I'm a smart person and I'm going to do what's necessary in order to be successful. You know, I will do better than my parents. And that to me said, when you look and compare us to other countries, mm-hmm. we're not doing as well. And that's the thing right now where people are like, okay, well, I'm going to go to school and I'm going to leave school and I owe $150,000, $200,000. And so, I mean, it's a very interesting way of looking at it because I think there's that whole notion out there. Gladwell talks about the fact that when Harvard made this announcement, kind of give Renato a hard time about, you know, he went to Yale.
Yeah,
Harvard
really
made
did.
This announcement that they had people could attend Harvard if they were making under a certain amount of money, but they had the right SAT scores and they were performing well academically. They can get into Harvard. Gladwell goes there like a year later and he says, "How many kids did you let into Harvard?" And they were like, "Six. Only six were eligible." And he said, "Out of the United States of America, it was like some single digit number or maybe a little higher." And he's like, "You only found this many students?" And he goes and he does the study and he finds out. Based on the areas that he looks at, their economic levels, people in the communities of poverty, and the SAT scores, and these are kids who only take the SAT once and they ace it, right? They ace it and they're killing it in class, but they have no designs of going to college or the best college. He finds that 135,000 students would have been eligible to go to Harvard,
and they didn't apply, or they
no Harvard ever found them. I mean,
well, Harvard shouldn't have to find them. Those kids should be applying to Harvard.
Yeah, I know, but
Harvard.
Here's the point is, yeah, they should be applying to Harvard, but their notion is like, well, that's all that was out there. It's kind of like when you're looking for qualified, you know, women for the job. It's like, well, we only found this. There aren't that many women for the job. No, if you look, you'll find. And I mean, a little bit of the onus is on, if you're making a major announcement as a university that we have a several billion dollar endowment and we're going to provide education for free for kids who are smart, who come from communities that are predominantly poor and disproportionately of color. Right.
Right.
And you're going to give them an opportunity to go to school. And yet, they don't know about it. And then it says a couple things. It says, number one, you didn't do the outreach and they weren't familiar and you didn't advertise it as much. Some kids were aware, but also says to me that, you know, Harvard was content with the fact that there weren't as many students applying. And that's what Gladwell's point was. And
I want to read. So this is an author named, he's an economist.
Malcolm Gladwell wrote Outliers. Wrote Blink. Wrote David and Goliath. And he has a show called Revisionist History.
Because I'm curious. I see friends post a lot of things on Facebook. You know, they'll have like the big bold. Was that another record day on the Dow? We're over 23,000. You know, and you know about how well the president is doing. And I just never saw them post during the increase, 160% increase during President Obama's administration, or the 235% increase in returns during his administration, or during, were they that excited? I mean, it seems as though they're like, see, but what do you mean see? It was, it rose by 160% over the last 8 years.
For whom? Who's is it benefiting?
Right.
I mean,
it's
that's the point. And like, if you ask most people out there, and Esmeralda was just talking about it, how many people have investments? How many people are in the stock market?
Right. Who's that benefiting?
And that's fine if you're doing it. But the thing is, if the market's going up for you, like in reality, like if you're really having a discussion, what percentage of your earnings are derived from stock market, right? And some of it may be in the 401k, some in retirement. But I mean, really, when you have that kind of discussion, it's an important, I think it's very revealing. And look, there's so many things that people cite and they give you an indication or try to give you a feeling that this is a reflection that you're going to be doing well as hardworking middle class people, that things are getting better because the stock market's doing better. Well, isn't it distinctly possible that there are just people who are just doing quite well in the stock market who aren't hardworking middle class people, and they're just people who have a lot of money to invest and, you know, they're reaping the benefits of it?
Yeah, where is that coming from? Interesting. Yeah. Well, and that was another thing, too. I heard that I was listening to who was talking about it yesterday. They were discussing the fact that this was, you know, this is also, we're reaping the benefits of the, you know, global, you know, mechanizations to improve the economy everywhere, and there was a lot of money pumped into the global economy 10 years ago, and now a lot of that's starting to come to the surface now. So it's who knows what's going to happen in a year, 2 years, 5 years, and it'll be interesting to watch.
You've read The Audacity of Hope, right, by Barack Obama?
I have not.
He actually talked about this, globalization. I mean, he had a whole vision for it.
Yeah.
A pretty smart guy. He was a president for a while.
Was he?
8 years.
Oh, yeah. 160% increase in the stock market?
Yeah.
More after this on 720 WGN.